Coming up on this edition of the Golf Digest Fantasy Fix podcast, we'll break down the field at Erin Hills for the 2017 U.S. Open. Welcome back to the Golf Digest Fantasy Fix podcast. I'm Alex Myers, and as always, I'm joined by Joel Beal, who is actually at Erin Hills as we speak. Joel, we welcome you in. How's it going out there?
So far it's staying dry. I don't know if anyone's seen the forecast. There's going to be thunderstorms every day this week until Sunday, where it looks like we're going to break. But right now, it's sun is shining. That old Midwestern heat wave that I totally forgot exists is out and about. So, it's a beautiful day here in Erin.
Yeah, you mentioned the forecast. Definitely should talk about that, because obviously one man in particular is rooting for the rain, and not just the rain, but he is rooting for thunderstorms, let's be honest. That's Phil Mickelson, who has a late Thursday tee time, which was a nice little gift from the USGA, but he still thinks he needs about a four-hour delay to be able to make it from Carlsbad, California, where his daughter Amanda is having her high school graduation and giving a commencement speech, to get over to Erin Hills in Wisconsin. It looked like he had no chance, but I just looked at an updated forecast, and there is now a 60% chance of thunderstorms on Thursday morning. So, Joel, what do you think? I mean, what do you think about Phil's chances?
Well, not only that, but in the sense of this course is just in the middle of the field, it sounds like they're going to be pretty conservative when it comes to if bad weather does come, because there are very few places for fans to kind of go and see cover.
Interesting.
If there really is ominous weather, they're not going to just, you know, call it for a half hour and bring everybody back. If they're going to call it, it's going to be for a long time. So if there is type of any weather delay, it's expected to be on the longer side. Now, granted, 4 hours is still a pretty damn long delay.
Yeah.
Something that seemed inconceivable just 5 days ago, I'd say now has at least like a 20% chance of getting pulled off. So the fact that we've been having this conversation is a miracle in itself, really.
Yeah, it's funny you mentioned 20% chance, because Bookmaker just came out with their list of prop bets, and they had a special bet on Phil Mickelson whether or not he'll play, and the underdog is that he will play, and they have it at 10-1 odds, which is only 10%, obviously, or actually a little less. And I was surprised, because you know everybody who takes that bet is going to be betting on that. So they must think that it's a real long shot. But I wonder if they have checked weather.com in the last 5 minutes like I did, and like I'm sure Phil Mickelson is checking every couple minutes.
Here's the one thing I want to ask. Like, let's say he needs this weather delay, right? Like, what happens if it's like he's in the air and he can't land because it's so bad?
That's a good point. You
know? Like, I feel like that's not being mentioned whatsoever.
That's a good point. Yeah. What about, I guess he'll be taking off from Carlsbad, which, as we all know, is perfect. It's every day 70 and sunny. So he'll be fine with that. But you're right. He needs to be able to land the plane. And presumably he's flying on Air Phil or whatever, and he's got, it's not a huge plane coming in there, so maybe some more precautions in terms of landing as well. So, again,
one thing helping his favor is if he needs anywhere to land, he can land on this property. These fairways are the size of airport runways, so that's something he's got going in his favor.
So, yeah, land right near the first tee box. That would be really helpful. We saw Lexi Thompson skydive to a pro-am tee time a few weeks ago. Maybe Phil can do something like that as well, just add to the drama. Anyway, well, it's interesting just because weather is always a topic of conversation at a big golf tournament. But in this week in particular, it's pretty amazing. But you mentioned Sunday's forecast looked good. That's always the most important day. A lot of times you can get caught up, hopefully, by Sunday. And if you have to have a really long day, it's whatever. You just get caught up. But we'll have to see how it plays out. We know these weathermen are not very accurate from our own rounds when we go out there. So we'll see. Moving on, let's talk about the course itself, Joel. Now that you've gotten to see it for a few hours, we've heard a lot about it, read a lot about it over the past few years. It's kind of been a mystery course, kind of like when they went to Chambers Bay a couple years ago. You know, as much as you read or see pictures, you really don't know much about it until you see it in person. And now that you have, I wonder what some of your first impressions of Erin Hills are.
I mean, the first thing that comes to mind is just expansive. I've never seen land like this before. As we were mentioning right before the podcast started, a place like Oakmont, last year's venue, is just about 200 acres of land. This checks in, I believe, at like 680. So, I mean, it's a good thing you're not here, because somebody I was walking with through six holes, they said they got 10,000 steps in. So let that sink in.
Wow.
It's so weird in the sense of you only really see a hole at a time because there's so much fescue covering the property that it just seems like every hole is its own venue. It's a little bit of an optic illusion that way, because it looks like because you see all this fescue covering all this land that the fairways and greens and tees look so small. But then you actually go up on the fairways, and they're some of the biggest fairways in all of golf. No joke, I feel like these fairways are three times as large as Oakmont.
Now,
there are heavy winds that do grace this land, so you kind of need that. But if everyone can remember, if everyone has seen the Kevin Na video where he's kind of complaining that there's only 5 yards of rough until he hits a fescue, he's right. What he doesn't really mention is that these fairways are so big that really they're like, I can't, it's really hard to compare them to anything else we see in the game. So accuracy, yeah, will be a key to keep them in the fairway, but you don't necessarily have to be, you know, somebody like Fred Funk to, you know, just down the center every time. Like, you can be a tad wild off the tee and still get away with this without finding the heavy stuff.
Yeah, you know, you mentioned kind of how everything's going to be so spread out. There was talk that they could get 100,000 fans in there, but they're capping it at 35,000. I'm just wondering, from a fan experience, you know, it seems like you have plenty of opportunity to have a great vantage point on maybe any individual hole, but a lot of times it's cool to be at a golf tournament to be able to be in a spot where you can see a couple different holes going on at the same time. It sounds like that's not the case here as much.
They gave us a few sheets of where those multiple vantage points can be.
Okay.
Check two of them out, and it's a stretch to say you can see multiple holes. You can maybe see parts of the hole, but you can actually really see the action.
Interesting.
And, you know, that's obviously there's some good and bad to that. But, yeah, if you're on a hole, you're on a hole. You're not getting any looks at what's going on the rest of the course, put it that way.
Yeah, you mentioned the Na video. That's getting a lot of play, obviously. A lot of people are clicking on that. I can only imagine if a bigger name than Kevin Na had done a video like that, what would have happened? Because, let's be honest, Kevin Na is not exactly a superstar. Are you hearing anything else? I know you mentioned that the fairways are really generous, but, you know, you are going to hit a loose shot every once in a while. And if there's absolutely no way to play the ball out of the rough, or if we get a lot of lost balls and a lot of looking for balls, you know, USGA, there's a lot of talk about speeding up the pace of play and all this. And, you know, that just doesn't seem like that's going to happen this week. Is that going to be a negative in your view?
So a story will be coming up on the website shortly about just, you know, I was curious because, you know, Na has a little bit of a, you know, fickle reputation, but I think most guys respect him. So for him to say that, I think was a pretty big shot to USGA. And granted, I think most players, you know, they're looking for any small thing to kind of blow up. I think that they've just been ingrained with this prejudice from their past experiences. But, you know, you go, and the thing is, Na is right, but he's also a little wrong because, yes, when you get right off that fairway and rough, those first, let's say, 5 to 6 yards of heavy fescue, it's not the fescue you think of in Scotland or some of the, you know, clock length courses around here where if you find it, you can play out of it. It really is a lost ball.
Right.
What Na's video doesn't convey is that it's not all the fescue like that. It's really just those first few yards. And after that, you can actually find your ball and hit your ball pretty easy. I follow the Jordan Spieth, Jim Furyk, Stricker group. A lot of guys were hitting into that crap, and they got out of it with ease. It's almost one of those things where it's better to miss bad than just miss, you know, just miss right off it. Then you can be in trouble. But for someone like, I don't know, Jason Day, who when he misses, he tends to miss really bad, I don't think it'll be that big of an issue. There are certain spots you can tell, like right around the 300-yard marker. Of course, there's like the fescue on it's bigger than maybe other parts of the course. And there are some marsh areas that tend to be a little thicker as well. But on the whole, it's not as bad as Na's video made it out to be. Also kind of interesting is the rough itself. It's very sparse for a U.S. Open venue. Mm-hmm. Not your local Muni by any means, but this isn't Marion or Oakmont. I think if you guys do find the rough, it's not going to be a Pebble. So, I think you're going to see some guys who, yes, they do are going to lose their ball. I will say there were markers all over the place. And there might be a situation or two. It's not going to be an issue where we're going to have 6 hour rounds because of it, though.
Okay. Well, that's good to know, I guess. I just would hate to see the tournament hinge on a ball that just goes into the fescue and they can't find the ball. That would just be awful. I mean, I don't care. I've said this many times. If there's one tournament a year where you have to just hack it out sideways, you know, suck it up, make your bogey, I don't mind seeing that. In fact, I think when you and I and Ryan Harrington were talking last week, we were all kind of a little worried that Aaron Hills might play too easy for a U.S. Open, but it sounds like, this rough is going to, bring people's scores up a little higher, and I'm all for that. But if you lose a ball in the rough, that's ridiculous, especially at a major tournament where you have marshals and fans and all that. But hey, if you're saying it's not going to be as big of a deal as Kevin Na made it out to be, then I'm hoping you're right, Joel. Hoping you are right. All right. Well, let's get to our picks. I'll let you start, Joel. Who is kind of leading the charge for you at Aaron Hills?
Yeah, I came in with a pick Monday morning, but after walking the course, my new guy's Ricky Fowler. He ranks 25th in driving accuracy, 13th approach, and 7th in putting. Add all it up, and he enters the U.S. Open ranked 7th in strokes gained. That's if you kind of look across the venues. Obviously, they vary across the board, but really strokes gained and strokes gained approach are the two areas you can kind of glean from. That's an area, obviously, Fowler's exceeding in. Given the fact that he averages over 300 yards off the tee, I think he'll be one of those guys praying for rain. The only thing that kind of gives me caution is he's 170th in approach out of rough. But as we just mentioned, it is relatively sparse. Not every shot will be penalized. I know he missed a cut just last week, but his overall season, he's got 3 top 3s and 5 top 10s. I think he's back to being that guy we mentioned just a year ago at this time, who was one of golf's big four. Fowler's my new favorite. I'm going Ricky.
Wow. Yeah, that is funny you bring that up. It was just about a year ago where it was, is Fowler part of the big four? And he was even saying, I need to win a major first, which is true. But interesting. Also interesting is that he had that year a few years ago with the 4 top 5s in majors. Then he really hasn't done anything in a major since. But he's obviously won, including the Players.
He wasn't that Fed Ultimate group at the Masters.
He was. That was so. Whew, that was a rough Sunday for him. But you're right. You're right. He was right there. Interesting. I know his high finish though at the U.S. Open was when he was runner up to Martin Keimer, but he lost by about 20 shots. So he hasn't really been in contention at a U.S. Open. But again, we'll see. And I like your throwing out the rough there because you're saying. I would almost say you throw out the rough for most people because, like you said, this is not typical rough, especially if you miss wildly. If you're in the high stuff, everybody's going to be hacking it out anyway, so I don't think there's going to be too much skill to be gained there. I'm going to go with my first guy. I know this is so boring, but one of us has to take him, and that's Dustin Johnson. I know he's awaiting the birth of his fiancée, Paulina Gretzky's, and him, their second child. That's supposed to happen at some point on Monday. He's supposed to get there, hopefully maybe Monday night, get some practice Tuesday, Wednesday. Though he's made trips to Aaron Hills already, especially in anticipation of this timing of having the kid. And we know how well he's played at the last two U.S. Opens. Obviously, a 3-putt away at Chambers Bay, perhaps from going for a third consecutive one this year. He won last year, even with the rules controversy. And a big reason why, obviously, is the premium on driving that this tournament places. And nobody is a better driver, maybe Rory McIlroy, in the game. You got to hit it long. You got to hit it straight. And that's what Dustin's game is really all about. So I'm loving DJ this week. I think that people have cooled a little on him just because he hasn't kept up that pace where he was winning every week earlier in the season, but I think he's moved up to 7-1 odds. I wouldn't bet on that. That's a little too low of a payback for my taste, but I still think he's definitely deserving of that favorite status.
And as you just mentioned, he did get some practice rounds out when he missed the cut Memorial just a week ago. So it's not like he's seen this court unseen.
Yeah.
With how big these places are, I think that he's one of the four or five guys that benefits the most if rain does come, because all of a sudden this golf course, which is almost 7,800 yards, becomes a little bit longer. That just plays right to Dustin Johnson's, right to his prowess. So yeah, we haven't seen him much in the last month or so. He's got to be on the short list.
Yeah, let's talk about the yardage actually for a second. We thought it was going to be a little shorter than this, but the official yardage, now obviously it's going to vary from day to day. There's some drivable par fours. There's some par fives where there's a lot of flexibility on the tees. Obviously, there's always some flexibility with par threes. But 7,741 yards, it is officially the longest course in U.S. Open history, but there are also four par fives. So, of course, a U.S. Open course with four par fives, it's the first time since 1992 at Pebble Beach, you're going to have a little longer yardage. So I know, Joel, it's probably tough to see, and again, a lot's going to be dependent on how much rain we get, but, how important is length, do you think, this week?
Well, I think it's paramount, especially because it's not that it's just long. It's extremely windy up here, and there's a lot of elevation. One of the par fours, I think that's 504 yards. It's really playing like 530, or at least it was today, into the wind, and it goes uphill at a pretty severe rate. So you really have to be able to hit the ball 300 yards. Anybody, I hate to say, just a name like Kevin Kisner or Wesley Bryan, it's going to be really hard for those guys to compete this week if the weather gets bad whatsoever. Right now, the course is pretty dry. I have seen some guys, when they get into the high stuff, chip it out, and they've been able to run it 50, 60 yards. But if we get the weather that we're supposed to, that's not going to be the case at all. So, yeah, you really have to be able to carry the ball far to compete this week.
Well, yeah, I know my four guys are all big hitters. Who's your next guy on the list?
Yeah, my guys are in the same framework, and second guy for me is Thomas Peters, who, the Ryder Cup might have been his coming out party, but it's really his performance at the Masters this year that grabs my attention. For a small window, he actually looked like he was going to run away with the Masters. Of course, Augusta's back nine had other plans, but I was extremely impressed by the way he responded to those troubles. I think a lot of guys without experience, when they get themselves in that situation, they kind of immediately will. But, Peters, he took it on the chin. He still finished fourth. Really, his game, I think when you look at it, you just go, how is this guy is going to be a top five player in the next few years? And since really that Masters, he's only played twice. I think skipping the players raised a few eyebrows, actually. But you put that aside, and coming in, what he does I really like this week is his approach shots. They're memorizing. He doesn't have enough rounds to qualify, but if he just had one more tournament under his belt, he would rank third behind Jordan Spieth and Francisco Molinari and shot strokes gained approach. So combined with his lights out putting stroke, I think he's a nice, mid to high tier price option this week. I think this is when we kind of figure out, this guy's for real. So yeah, Peters it is.
Yeah, Peters, 40-1 odds. He made our list of 13 best bets. By the way, check out golfdigest.com for a lot of preview stuff, obviously including Ryan Harrington's 9 sneaky picks and a lot of other stuff. But yeah, 40-1 odds. It's funny because there aren't a lot of guys in that 40, 50, 60-1 odds who I look at and I get excited about this week, but he is definitely one of those guys. It seems like all the guys that I'm leaning towards and most of the guys you're leaning towards are the bigger name guys. And again, I think a lot of that is because, like you mentioned, how important length is, and the bigger name guys are for the most part the longest hitters. So but yeah, Peters is definitely.
This is one thing where, obviously there's in our picks, there's going to be a variety of how these guys play, but I think distance really is a prerequisite to even get on the mention.
Yeah. But yeah, Peters, big hitter, played well at the Masters. And I'm just going to go next and take my next two guys because they're also big hitters who played great at the Masters. And I'm talking about, of course, Sergio Garcia and Justin Rose. Garcia topping Rose in that playoff. And it was actually he won because he just hit one of the most perfect drives you'll ever see on 18. It, of course, it sets up a little better for Sergio with that cut, but both of these guys, two of the best drivers in the game. I mean, DJ right now is number one in strokes gained off the tee. Sergio is number two, and Rose is number eight. So we're talking about, you know, three of the premier drivers there. You know, since he won the Masters, he's been gallivanting around. He went to Rory's wedding. He had the opening kickoff at the big soccer game. Sorry, soccer match, whatever, El Clasico. I don't want to have all the soccer fans go nuts at me. But, you know, so he hasn't played that much. But he's finished top 30 in his three events since, including the Players, when he actually played his way into contention going into Sunday, and it just looked like he ran out of gas. So, you know, he's not going to rest on his laurels here. He knows that he's playing well, and he's got a strike while the iron's hot. Finished T12 at Colonial just a couple weeks back. So really like Sergio. And I just think it's funny. I think when a guy wins the Masters, especially a first-time winner like Sergio, and by the way, we've had five consecutive first-time major winners. So be interesting to see if anybody else can break through in that regard. But I just think that people think, well, they can't do it again. They can't do it back-to-back majors. And certainly if you, you know, at the beginning of the season, if you bet on Sergio winning back-to-back majors, the odds would be astronomical. But once he's got the one under his belt, this is a separate event altogether. He's sitting there at about 25-1. I actually think he's slightly undervalued, if anything. He's got three previous top fives at U.S. Open. I'm all about Sergio. And Rose, of course, we know what he can do at the U.S. Open. He won at Marion a few years ago. Again, we've seen him come through at the big event. Came up just short against Sergio at the Masters, but was off to that tremendous start to the season. Again, has been cool off a little since, hasn't played that much, has been vacationing, this and that. But he'll be raring to go, and I just like both those guys this week. Probably not in a playoff again, but that would be fun. They'd get to go 18 holes this time.
Yeah, especially Rose. He's quietly getting a resume that's very similar to Dustin Johnson, Jason Day, in terms of just seems like every major he quietly gets in that top 10.
Yeah, exactly.
I think he's just one of the more undervalued guys, which is amazing to say, given his stature in the game. But I feel like at least over here in America, we don't realize Rose is the top 10 player he is.
Yep. No, I agree. Totally. All right. So I went, those are my two and three guys. Back to you, Joel, for your third guy.
Tenor Stenson's number three for me. You know, for a guy who won the Open Championship just 10 months ago as number six in the world, you're not really hearing a peep about Stenson. I guess part of that could be he doesn't have a track record of merit at the U.S. Open. He did grab a T4 in 2014, but other than that, nothing to really write home about. And I think a lot of it has to do with his, you know, occasional woes with the putter. However, if we do get the forecasted rain, which we're supposed to, these Aaron Hill sand floors, they'll be pretty tame. I think they'll give Stenson the go-ahead for his aggressive stroke, kind of similar to how we saw at Troon last summer. Moreover, you know, if it does get wet, you know, you finding the fairway will be supreme. I think Stenson has a huge advantage taking out his 3-wood on every hole, and he's losing zero distance. I mean, this is a guy whose 3-wood goes farther than probably 40% of the other tour players drive.
Yeah.
So if he can do that, you know, he's playing well. He finished third at the BMW PGA Championship just a few weeks back. I think it's weird to call him a dark horse, but, you know, given the little amount of PR he's getting coming into this, I like Stenson to be there on Sunday.
Yeah, I mean, he was always regarded as kind of a dark horse just because he'd never won a major. Then he wins and everybody goes, oh, here, you know, the floodgates are going to come open. But you're right, less than a year later, we're kind of already forgetting about him. I know for some reason his U.S. Open track record scares me, but who knows? I mean, they've never played at Aaron Hills before, so I guess you kind of throw that out a little bit. And you mentioned the rain maybe softening the greens. Sure. But, yeah, Henrik Stenson, obviously, you know, no one hits a 3-wood or irons potentially better than him. My fourth guy is, I know a guy I talked about on our preview podcast as well, and that's Brooks Koepka. You know, I can't take all, major champions with my picks, so I'll branch out a little with Brooks. I think someday he will be a major champion. It could be this week. I am surprised he's only won the one PGA Tour event at the Waste Management a couple years back. I kind of thought by now he'd have maybe three or four or five wins under his belt with the talent he has. But obviously, He got off to a tough start this year, missed the cut at Bay Hill, went to the range after, kind of figured things out, and has been on a really nice run since. Past couple weeks, not much, you know, finishing in the top 40 of a couple events, but this is a guy who, you know, really, I think, again, this course sets up well for him. I think he's going to be able to grip it and rip it. He has the best percentage of making eagles on par fives this year on tour. He gets those two extra chances each day with the four par five setup. I think that plays into his advantage as well. So, again, Brooks Koepka, a name that I think, you know, this is a guy we can see winning majors soon. And the U.S. Open seems to be the major where he's played the best, including a T4 at Pinehurst in 2014.
Yeah, this definitely seems to be a tournament that, at least compared to its major brethren, it really kind of speaks to the athletic regimen. And, you know, you look at Koepka, I mean, the guy looks like someone you create out of a video game. So sometimes I think the lack of touch around the green kind of hurts him in spots, or even just kind of the drop in mental game. But that being said, obviously, this is the one course that really racks the cognitive discipline. And Koepka's shown in the past he's able to do that. So. It's weird that he has only won once. It gives me a little bit of hesitancy, but we've seen plenty of guys win with less, you know, less of a resume than Koepka. I think he's definitely has to be on your radar.
And you have one more guy, Joel. Who's your fourth?
My last guy, and this is the guy who was my favorite as this morning, but I still like him. This is very weather dependent, though. That's Jason Day. You know, five top tens in his last six Open appearances. I think that kind of speaks for itself. He's first in strokes gained around the green, which is, you know, big as we know, because scrambling is big at these type of tournaments. You know, bogey, it's not even necessarily saving par, but saving bogey instead of making double or triple. I will say, if you're walking the course, that Dave's wildness just scares me a little bit. As I mentioned, you can kind of miss really bad and be okay, but for a guy with, you know, as much issues as Day has off the tee, you know, he's 145th in accuracy with his driver. That scares me a little bit, especially when you see. See some of this rough, just right off the some of the fescue, I should say, right off the rough. But the reason I like him is, again, the weather forecast is to be absolute crap this week. I think that Day's distance and ability to go well kind of puts him head and shoulders above his competition. Again, very big caveat is monitor the weather as the week goes on. But if it gets wet, I think Day still merits a spot in your lineup.
Yeah. Talk again how quickly things can change. I mean, a year ago, Jason Day was the guy. The pick, period. He's still 12-1 odds. He's right there, right with Jordan Spieth and Rory, kind of as those 2-3-4 guys behind DJ. But I agree, you're not hearing his name that often. Of course, a lot has to do with the tough year he's been having. But that runner-up at the Byron Nelson shows he's right back. I think.
They had a nice little Sunday too at Memorial just a few weeks ago as well.
Right, and of course, he really didn't have a good track record either. So, I think he's rounding back into form. He's too good to have a year where he's not going to win at least one event and not contend in at least one major. So you got to figure he's going to be in the mix at some point. No reason to think it won't be this week. Let's talk about a couple maybe further down the list, guys. I'm hearing a lot of Charles Schwartzel picks today. A lot of guys really digging him after his runner-up or T2 at Memphis over the weekend. You know, he only weighs about a buck 50, but he's one of these sneaky long guys. Of course, we know he won the Masters. Took him a few years to win another PGA Tour event, but he did win the Valspar last year. Do you like him at all this week, Joel?
Yeah, we picked him last week for Memphis, but I think if you use him. If you're using the St. Jude Classic as your impetus, I think you're a little off base. I mean, we saw this last year with Daniel Berger at Oakmont. People thought, hey, this is the guy's next big thing. He clearly just won, and then Berger went and, you know, barely made the cut and finished, I think, T40 or T37, something like that. I like Schwartzel's game a lot. I do worry about he's not short, but he's definitely not one of the longer hitters either. And really, his major record hasn't been the greatest since that win at Augusta. So he's not a bad pick, but, man, if you're making him your dark horse, yeah, I'd like to have a little bit more conviction than I have in Schwartzel at the moment. But that's just me.
All right. Now, how about another dark horse? I know we mentioned off the air, and that's Bryson DeChambeau, who had to play his way into the field again. He hasn't really blown up like we thought he would on the PGA Tour. He's kind of been replaced by Jon Rahm as, you know, the young star coming up. But how about him this week?
I don't think even call him a dark horse. I think we're talking like a black hole out of, you know, either that type of pick. It's funny, you know, just last year at Oakmont, DeChambeau was the guy. You know, he had that great Masters performance. The next week, finished fourth at Hilton Head. And played well at Oakmont last year, too. I think he finished T20 or T15.
T15, yeah, yeah.
So, you know, clearly shown he can play at an open venue. But, man, he's just in loss this year. He had a T2 at Puerto Rico. But after that, he comes in, I think, missing his last seven cuts. He's only made six on the season on 20 events. So he's definitely not coming in hot, but he had to earn his way in through sectionals. And this is a guy who I think we kind of know him for his oddities, but he's actually one of the longer players on tour. Really, his kind of issues come kind of around the green, but, you know, very few guys hit as far as DeChambeau. When his irons get going, man, he almost reminds you of like Hideki Matsuyama, how just methodical he is and mechanic. It's beautiful to watch. The putting has been a bit of an issue, but as we mentioned with Stenson, if it starts raining here, someone like Spieth, who I think would have a really big advantage if it was dry out, suddenly Jordan Spieth, you know, the putting prowess kind of goes to the wayside a little bit if everyone's putting on slower greens. So I think that could really help DeChambeau. By no means am I picking him to win, but if you're looking for someone to come out and all of a sudden get a T10 out of nowhere, I think DeChambeau is the one you have to circle.
Yeah, 200-1 odds, not bad. Seems like if a major is set up for him, it probably would be this one. Just fairways, greens, two-putt move on, hope that the score is somewhere around even par. Seems to be a setup for him. One other guy I want to mention is Jason Duffner. He won recently. I know you're worried about his length, but he is 29th in strokes gained off the tee. He has two T4s and a T8 in the last 5 years at the U.S. Open. In the same mold as DeChambeau, you know, he's not a guy you expect to make a lot of putts for birdie, but if he can just fairway green, you know, hit 16 greens, shoot, you know, one or two under, he seems like a really nice player for a U.S. Open kind of plodding along.
And if you're kind of wondering, too, like, well, you know, if he's in the distance, he actually is pretty good with his iron from medium to long distance as well. So that shouldn't stop you from going his way. Yeah, like you mentioned, for Duffner, it's always just putting, but not to keep sounding like a broken record, but if it gets wet, that really evens the field for these guys who struggle with a flat stick. And not only is he coming in hot, but I think he's coming in with, more importantly, a little conviction that he hasn't had in the past, you know, 3 or 4 years. So, Duffner's a name who, you know, we really don't bring him up in U.S. Opens, but the way he's coming in, I definitely wouldn't bet against him.
Any other things you want to mention, Joel, this week? I heard the press room is pretty cold down there. Is that true?
Yeah, I'm currently looking at somebody wearing a blanket draped over them, which is, I don't know if they're planning on like a 100-degree heat wave, but given that's just the rain here in about an hour, I'm a little worried about catching the flu here. More importantly, I think you would, with your palate, I should say, uh-huh, you would be disgusted by the things at the concession stands. Basically, everything has cheese and lots of it slathered all over every item. So I thought about maybe sending some to the office, you know, one of those dry ice containers,
yeah,
just for posterity. But then I looked at the prices, and it was a little ridiculous. So I think you picked a good one to stay at home, buddy.
Yeah, all right. Well, that's good to know. That's good to know. Any Chili's in the area, do you know, or have you scoped out the dinner spots yet?
The dinner I had last night was one of the worst I've ever had on the road. This even goes back to, like, you know, some looking at minor league ballparks and things like that. And at one point, as I was almost hugging the toilet last night, I legitimately thought it's still better than Chili's.
So, oh, come on. That's terrible. Chili's is great.
What'd
you go to? Some hole in the wall? You got to go to a chain restaurant.
I don't like the chain. I like supporting the mom and pops.
But you know what you're going to get. You know what you're going to get at the chain. You're not going to be...
Listen, we can have this battle till the sun goes down. So I think there's going to be as many things we agree on. This is one we will never come at odds with. So.
All right. Well, anyway, good luck finding some good food. Good luck with the weather. Although, again, I think a lot of golf fans are kind of hoping it's kind of ugly on Thursday just to see if there is some Phil Mickelson drama. And good luck not getting lost in the fescue, Joel. Have a good week out there. We will talk. And to everybody else, thank you for listening. Good luck in your respective leagues, your pools, whatever you're doing this week with the U.S. Open. Enjoy the golf. Enjoy watching the mystery of Aaron Hills unfold before your very eyes. And please subscribe to us on iTunes if you haven't done so already. And check back next week when we break it all down.